Don't mind the countdown. This is the service we use. It's very dramatic.
I gotcha.
Well, alrighty, gang. Welcome back to the Active Cell Protection Podcast. I am once again your host, Mike Williver, and I remain, with any luck at all, your favorite former Fed. With me today is a new friend of mine. His name is George O'Rourke. George hailed from East Texas. He is married with two children and is self-employed. George, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you writing in. We do a brief pre-interview before we do this show. I don't tend to want to know a lot about the story ahead of time for reasons I won't bother repeating for the 30th time. But during that time, he did mention to me that he is in East Texas, and I got to see briefly out the back window, new place he just bought. He and his wife just purchased recently, and it looks lovely in the backyard. I'm sorry you can't see it, folks, but it looks like very picturesque, very rural.
10 acres of peace.
Lovely. And you have chickens, yes?
Yes, sir. Chickens and two kids, and so far working on goats
could be the name of your memoir. So just check that aside. Write that note down now. Could come in handy later. And I just had to turn your volume down real quick, so it's not clipping. So anyway, so he wrote in and said during the pre-interview, he wrote in because of the interview from last week. Last week, in case you listen to this out of order, the interview was with a security professional who was doing armored car type work and was able to avoid a couple of situations. And George heard that and he's like, hey, that sounds familiar. I was able to avoid a couple of situations, at least in part, I say, because of watching the Active Cell Protection channel and learning some lessons over there. So that we love that so much. That's why we do what we do. And to hear success stories, and people write to us all the time. They don't want to be the show necessarily, but write to us all the time saying, hey, this or that happened. And it's always very gratifying to hear. So first, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background. Were you ever in a security, law enforcement, military, any kind of a professional field like that?
Yeah. So, grew up in San Diego and 2008 joined the Army. Was an infantryman for 6 years. After I got out, I became a security guard. Kind of did the usual, mall cop kind of stuff. And after that, got bored and started going crazy and doing different things like becoming a chef and a pilot and whatever else there is to do. Firearms instructor, actually, for a little while up in Oregon.
So you're Forrest Gump without the accent. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, so far.
That's really cool. So do you have a pilot's license as well?
I do, yes.
That's very good. So that's one of those bucket list things I doubt I'll ever have the time or money to do, because I know it's very time and cost intensive. I know that because I have a couple of pilot friends, to include John Correa, by the way, who's over the last few years has lived his dream of becoming a private pilot. So in fact, he flew down a couple of weeks ago, which is so cool. He's in a flying club in Phoenix. And so, a bunch of guys share an airplane. Basically, they share the cost of the maintenance and the insurance and everything. And he just flew down from, because the drive from Phoenix to Tucson and vice versa is not the most pleasant or picturesque drive in the world. So he just flew down one morning and we went to breakfast and he flew back, and it's great. So that's very cool. So what made you decide to join the Army, and how old were you when you did that?
I was 18, and honestly, I remember 9/11 happened and kind of growing up and watching everything on the news, the war clips every single night kind of instilled this, I want to do my part, be a part of history kind of thing. And seems kind of young and dumb and naive at this point, but at the time it's what I wanted to do. So,
well, there's a reason they let you join the military before they let you drink a beer. You know what I mean? Decision-making being what it is. And I joke, but I thank you for your service, and anybody listening who served in the military, I think sometimes we can throw bandy around a lot of cliches like thank you for your service or talk about people in the military being heroes, but those things are true. And I said it before, I'll say it again. I remember, I'm old enough, I'm 52. I'm old enough to remember a really ugly chapter in our history where, our servicemen and some women, came back from Vietnam and were treated very, very poorly for going and doing what their country asked them to do, and doing it in large part in very professional capacity. And that's unfortunate. And I hope we never, ever go back there again. So I do thank you for your service. Did you ever, and this is a question I think people, who don't know anyone in the military might not think to ask, did you ever see any actual combat, or were you a combat adjacent at any point during your time in the Army?
So I appreciate your support. And yeah, so we were, my battalion was over there in 2011, which is kind of one of the spiciest years of the war, 10, 11, 12, right after Osama bin Laden got waxed. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge power vacuum, and everybody was coming out of the woodworks to take pot shots at us or blow us up. And I mean, there was days you would go out on patrol and get shot at three times before you made it back. And some days there was absolutely nothing, and they made up for it with a, you know, a mortar barrage for 3 hours or something like that. So from the older guys that went to Iraq, they were telling us it was a pretty kinetic deployment, even for their standards.
Yeah. There's an old description of law enforcement that says it's, you know, a given shift in law enforcement is 9 hours and 45 minutes of stark boredom interrupted by a moment of stark terror. And that can be said as well, as I understand it. I never served in the military, but as I understand it from all, I have a ton of friends who did and who served in combat. That's an accurate description of that as well, because just when you're finally like, almost sort of relaxing is a relative term in a combat zone, I'm sure, but as soon as you're almost able to relax, that's when the mortars are going to start flying in, or someone's going to decide to take a shot at you from the road or whatever. So crazy stuff. So thank you so much for that. You were infantry. So for those who don't know, I think a word that gets bandied around a lot is infantry. I think people think they know what that is, versus cavalry or versus armored or versus recon or whatever. So what is an infantry soldier, and what does he do?
So infantry is the basic line grunt. So a lot of the World War II movies you watch, things like that. It's just the guys, the riflemen, the grenadiers, things like that. From infantry, you can go to airborne, you can go to ranger, and go everything from there. But infantry is just the grunts in the Army. Some guys do 20 years doing that and make a long career out of it and see a lot of action and mess around with a lot of cool guns.
Right. Yeah. And I would imagine it seems almost obvious, but I guess I'll say it anyway. Like, I would imagine there's probably more infantrymen than pretty much any other job, right? In the Army, at least.
Surprisingly not.
Really?
It's very small with the infantry. A lot of it's support. And, you know, everybody likes to say the grunts win the wars, and yes, we do, but if you don't have the armor, if you don't have the supply guys, if you don't have fresh uniforms or
food,
boots and things like that, food, yeah. you're not winning anything, you know, helicopter pilots, the whole shebang.
I was watching something not long ago about part of General Grant's campaign in the Civil War. And there were times when he and Sherman were both moving so quickly. They were so successful moving so quickly. They outran their own supplies. They outran their own supply lines. And it literally had to stop what they were doing and wait for that stuff to catch up, because you can't send famished barefoot soldiers. You can. I mean, it's happened, right? If you have to, you will. But you prefer not to send famished barefoot soldiers out to fight your battles for you, because they don't tend to, their morale tends to kind of suffer, and their combat effectiveness tends to suffer as well. So very interesting. And I'm glad you gave credit to all those people. I used to say when I worked like on a task force, you know, pay attention to and, you know, buy a Christmas present for the guy cleaning the bathrooms and emptying the trash, because if he wasn't doing it, I'd have to. And that would be, you know, every week that'd be 1 hour less I can spend doing my job. So yeah, I think everyone's got a role to play. So after you got out, you said you did security. Did you actually do mall security? Because I did mall security back in the day, back in the very early 90s, briefly. So is that something you actually did?
Yeah, so I got out and I was in Texas. I got a medical discharge for some back injuries.
Okay.
And went and got my level 3 certification. And it was a stark difference from my military life. So
yeah,
I had to get used to the calmness and relax a little bit more, and did some security at a graveyard, mall, an adult toy shop, and then a asphalt plant.
I can imagine. I just can picture your supervisor pulling you into his or her office to complain that we do not plan assaults on the food court. George, you need to relax. The Sbarro will be fine.
There's no need to flank the customers.
Exactly. Yes. Please don't.
Mile and wave.
You're making them nervous, George, for crying out loud. Very funny. All right. So, and now you are self-employed. You described it as handyman. You know what? you could never meet my wife because I am useless around the house and she would leave me for you probably if she met you, because I bet you're able to fix stuff and I'm terrible at that. We just installed a light the other day, one ceiling light. And man, you would have thought that I built the Eiffel Tower or something because I was so proud of myself when we got done. So
Electricity, you should definitely take credit for, because electricity is not a fun thing to mess around with.
The breaker box is your friend for sure. So anyway, enough about that. So let's talk about your two incidents. You had two separate incidents, both of which, spoiler alert, are a bit about avoiding a problem to the extent that you can. So when was the first one, and kind of walk us through where you were, who you were with, and what happened?
So the first one was about 2 years ago, summertime. So that would be 2021. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My son was 2 years old, and we are in downtown Dallas.
Okay.
So we're walking towards a museum, and as we're walking towards this museum, you know, we're on the sidewalk, and it's 102 degrees out, something like that.
Miserable.
So, I'm sorry, what was that?
Miserable.
It was hot. No matter the amount of AC, it's just a brutal day. Mm-hmm. So we're walking down the street, and remember off the left corner of my eye, I see an individual across the street, and then he's sitting on a car in a just on the hood of the car in a parking lot, wearing a parka, a beanie, and some sweatpants. So I immediately just told my wife, that is a very interesting outfit for this weather.
We call that a clue. Yes, something's not right.
Yeah, big clue. Headphones on as well, and I just noticed that he kind of looked up and looked at us as we were walking forward, and from his perspective, this is how I was looking at it. We definitely look like a soft target. You know, my wife's purse is on the back of the stroller. I've got a baby in here. And, you know, I'm walking around looking like a goofy guy in shorts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So as we kind of getting, you know, perpendicular to him, he hops up off the car and starts walking across the street a little bit. So I tell my wife to stop. And we just stop walking, and I just make eye contact with the individual. I don't care if it was rude at that point. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of look at him. He looks at me, kind of, and he keeps walking right in front of us, maybe about 20 feet, and goes into a restaurant.
So real quick,
maybe I'm crazy.
Had he been sort of on a trajectory to intersect with you guys before he stopped?
Is that
he stopped?
Okay. If we had kept walking, it would have been a perfect time and walk. So. Okay. Leads me to believe it's not the first kind of thing, but yeah, maybe I'm the bad guy at this time. I'm thinking he went into the restaurant. Okay. And my wife kind of says, see, it was nothing big and yada, yada, yada. So, you know, we keep walking. I tell her, all right, keep walking. And we pass the restaurant, and just this gut feeling I got. And I was not going to ignore it. You know, being through all the stuff I've been through. Mm-hmm. I tell her, you keep walking. And we just passed the restaurant, and there's a little kind of a concrete barrier that comes out from the door. That's like a little patio section.
Okay.
So I walk past that by about 10 feet and stop. And I turn around and kind of just pretend to mess with my shoe. And as I turn around, I see the individual peek his head around the cement barrier. So here's a barrier, just peek around, not walking like he's leaving the restaurant. And he's only been in that restaurant for 10 seconds.
Not suspicious of behavior at all.
He peeks around definitely. Oh, and he's talking on his headphones. He sees me. Mm-hmm. And I just eye him down. I'm like, what's up, bud? And he gives me a mischievous grin, like, oh, you got me.
Hmm.
And then keeps talking to himself as if he's talking to somebody on the telephone.
Right.
And his headphone cord pops out of his pocket. It's not even plugged into anything. So I just kind of stand there, and I look at him, and he continues to kind of just smile and pretend to talk. And he walks right across the street and go back to his little parking lot. Sits right back on his car.
And that was that. So that was that.
We kept walking.
That's a short and sweet story, but I want to point out, I think the most important two things that are important with that story. Number one is being aware of your surroundings. Listen, you were in the military and you were in a combat role. So you know what I'm talking about when I talk about the guy or gal in law enforcement or military or security or whatever, who claims to be switched on 24/7 and constantly, you know, scanning the environment for threats. listen, if you're doing that, you've got a problem. You need to stop doing that. You need to relax a little bit. Okay. Now, when you're out in public, what I want you to be is aware of your surroundings. That's all. Just, you know, don't have your head buried in your phone and don't be so engrossed in anything other than, or anything specific like a phone or anything or a book or anything else that you don't know what's going on around you. You're in public. Things could happen in public. And you were obviously aware enough to have spotted this guy way before it was going to be a problem. Second thing I appreciate is the fact that you didn't let confirmation bias. I need a nap. Normalcy bias take over and be like, oh, I'm sure it's nothing. Well, are you sure it's nothing? I don't know how you can be sure it's nothing or something at that point. You don't know. And so you didn't let that normalcy bias kick in and kick your butt and be like, no, I don't want to seem like, you know, there's a million reasons people employ normalcy bias. I don't want to seem racist or sexist or, you know, this phobic or that phobic or whatever. And so I'm just going to continue down this path I'm on or not avoid a situation or not get back in my car. You know what I mean? Or get my pepper spray in my hand in case or whatever, because they don't want to appear to be rude or mean-spirited or racist or anything else along those lines. And, you know, bad guys don't think for a second, they don't count on people feeling that way and thinking that way, because they do. They know that they're going to have a little bit of an advantage because you're probably going to take an extra second to do anything or react or hesitate because you don't want to be seen to be rude. Everyone wants to be seen as polite and friendly. And sometimes polite and friendly will get you killed or hurt or the loss of your property or whatever. So well job, well done. I need a nap, George. Well done either way and on both counts, because those things are important. And that's a huge part of what we teach at ASP is just be aware of your surroundings, man. So great job on that. So what was the second one? Walk us through that. About how long after the first incident was the second incident?
So second one happened 2 years later. Actually, it happened this past October.
Okay, so about two months ago?
Yeah, about three. What are we in? Yeah, almost January. Yeah, three months ago at this point. Yeah. I need a nap as well. We were at a pool party with my brother. And went to about 8 o'clock. We wrapped up the kids, started getting the kids home.
So backyard pool, and public Sundays, pool, what kind of pool are we talking about?
It's an apartment complex.
So a public pool, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So last weekend it was open. So we went out and wrapped up the kids about 8 o'clock and started heading home. And Sundays in Texas, nothing is open. So a lot of times the roads are usually empty. There's not a lot of vehicle traffic, people going home, yada yada kind of thing. So we're driving home, and the stoplight before my turn to my little residential area, we're at a red light. I notice there's nobody behind me, nobody's on the roads. Light turns green, and I felt like, you know, just a couple of seconds, because you're driving, dealing with the kids and family, and all of a sudden there's, you know, a red Challenger pulled up kind of a little too close behind me. Mm-hmm. It was an odd distance as I wrote down, and I remember it was just didn't feel right for a Sunday night. You know, nobody really goes down my residential area. It's a lot of older folk.
Was there another lane for him to be in, or was it just the one lane?
Oh yeah. So there was three lanes, and then it pulls off into a left turn lane. And as soon as I turned into that left turn lane, I immediately told my wife, she was saying something, and I just cut her off. That car's following us. Mm-hmm. It was what? The car's following us. And she goes, maybe they just live down this way. You know, you'll make a turn and, you know, we'll be fine. I said, all right. But remember, I said it here first. We're being followed. The light turns green and we make a left and start going down our little road there. And car is still behind me. Mm-hmm. So we live in a cul-de-sac. At the time, we lived in a cul-de-sac. And the street is divided by a curb with the grass in the middle, something like that. So you have to drive up, make a U-turn to come back down to our cul-de-sac.
Okay.
And if you're coming back down to the cul-de-sac, there's only our cul-de-sac, one more residential area, and then you're back to the main street. Okay. So I flip my blinker on, make the U-turn. So does he, or I don't know how many were in the car, but that vehicle follows us as well. And so I tell her they're following us and we are not going to get stuck in a cul-de-sac. right now with our kids and everything in the car.
No, I do remember you mentioning something about there being something had happened with a red Challenger, and you didn't know if it was related or not, but you did mention it. So can you tell us what that was? Because I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, so it was actually covered on the Ask channel, Duncanville, Texas, not too far from us. I think it was last month, end of November, beginning of December.
Okay.
A red Challenger followed a couple of gentlemen home from the bank. And this gentleman was carrying as well, but they had the drop on him, and he tried to draw, and they shot him in the back a couple of times. I believe he lived.
Okay.
And he shot back several times. But I believe he lived. John was saying he was did a GoFundMe for me in the hospital. But the news report, which is the big thing that caught me off guard in the morning, was again, it was a red Challenger that had followed him.
And so this place is close enough to you that it could possibly be related. I mean, it wasn't outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Dallas is just all this conglomerate kind of mishmash of everything. So it's all kind of this one thing at this point. So it's very, I mean, there's 100 Challengers out there, but it's very well could have been that.
Yeah, but this guy's acting hinky to boot, which isn't great. Had you considered at any point, like, not only do I not want to be in a cul-de-sac with a potential bad guy with a gun, but I don't want him to know where I live. Did that come into your consciousness at any point? Like, I don't want to actually pull up to my own house.
Oh yeah, that came into my head as well. And I was carrying my firearm at the time. Mm-hmm. And getting in a gunfight, you know, you versus a bad guy, that's one thing. You know what I mean? I can hold my own in a gunfight all day. Getting in a gunfight with your wife and your two kids back of the car versus two guys at night, it's a whole different ball game. That's not something that I was going to try to play with at that moment.
So before I interrupted you, you were about to or close to pulling into your cul-de-sac and changed your mind. So what happened then?
Yeah, so we made the loop. He made the loop. So, you know, three things are happening. He's following us. He's lost, or he lives on the cul-de-sac.
Right.
I know every car on the cul-de-sac. We were all friendly neighbors, and that's not the car that worked or that lived there. And again, they are following at a very odd distance. So before I get back to the main street, I make my right blinker come on to go down this residential street. It's another residential block, but this one has, you know, a big square street.
Okay.
So there's outlets this way, and there's escape plans pretty much. So we turn down that way. They follow us right up to the stop sign right there. And this is when I was kind of done with this. And again, this is all happening within 30 seconds. So mm-hmm. It's, you know, no time to really think except what am I going to do next? So I put on my right blinker again. They put on the right blinker. And as I turn to make my right, they start making a right turn. And I flip left. They kept going. I was in a Mazda, you know, little car. So my turning radius was great.
Mm-hmm.
They kept going to the right. And I watched them in my rearview mirror. So I sped down the way I was going, and I see them speed as fast as they can to get down to this end so they can kind of flip around if they can. And unfortunately for them, at that end, there was a bunch of cars out there, and the Challenger is a big old car. I was able to drive down this way, flip around, come back up. And by the time they were still doing their 25-point turn, I was able to get back out to the main road and drove back to my brother's apartment. Losing them in the process, got everybody back inside safe, and called the police.
So I have several questions that we just answered. One of them, did you call the police? And we'll talk about that in a second. I do want to discuss that. Are you secretly a crack cocaine dealer who carries around hundreds of thousands of dollars in your car and your wife and kids don't know it?
I have two kids, three dogs, a wife. I have no money. There's no money to be
had. Even if you were a crack cocaine, you still wouldn't have any money. So whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay, so is there any reason you can imagine why anybody other than just a stranger on victim crime trying to rob you or carjack you, or is there any reason you can imagine why somebody would want to do this or be after you for any other reason other than just a random crime?
I think I was just a dope out on Sunday, and these guys saw a car driving by, and from what I guess, they were sitting at a gas station off to my right when the light turned to green. But I've got absolutely no clue why they followed us. And it's been a kind of a rising thing here in Dallas. It's almost just crimes that don't make any sense. They're busting people's windows out, or, you know, breaking into fixed income homes thinking they're going to find, you know, gold and silver when it's just an old lady on a fixed income.
Right.
And they're just taking whatever whatever they can. I think it was a crime of opportunity. I think they saw it as a soft target, and it wasn't.
Is it possible they went to the Chick-fil-A drive-thru thinking it was open and got really, really sad and decided to go carjack someone?
That's very, very possible. It's Sunday. They should have known.
I'm spitballing here. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out why they're messing with you in particular. So they go this other way. Can I ask what model, if you don't mind, don't tell me the color, but what model of Mazda and what year it is? Because we're a Mazda family, just for the record.
Oh, gotcha. It's a 19 Mazda CX-5 with the all-wheel drive and kind of good stuff.
We too have a CX-5. I love our CX-5. It's a great truck, or car, I guess. It's not really a truck. It's a crossover, but good stuff. But it's got a little pep in its step. It's not a dog by any means. Even the base model engine is quick. It's not nothing. So you get home, you call the police. What do you tell them just happened? Because I can imagine you're like, wait, what am I calling about? Because I can imagine it'd be like, somebody sort of followed us. And what do you tell them? What do you say?
So kind of when I went through security training, it was kind of just the observe and report kind of thing. And that kicked in. I wanted to get it fresh before I, forgot details. So I just told them simply, hey, I believe I was followed home tonight. Told them the color of the car, the model of the car. It looked like a 2019 to 2020 with the black top package and this whole, I went into detail, like the light cars. So I called them, let them know where in the area it was at. And, I'd already lost them. So I told them, I got away. I didn't want to confront these guys. The closest police station is about 10, 15 minutes from where we're at. There's going to be a lot of stop signs and red lights all the way between that. So I didn't want to get stuck at a stop sign and have somebody pop out and do some dumb stuff. So I figured keep moving, get them out of there. It's a lot of military training came back, just get out of the kill zone, get through the ambush kind of thing.
Absolutely.
But that's pretty much all I could tell the police, and they made a report of it and said they'd be on the lookout there for any kind of suspicious activity.
Let me tell you why it's good that you called the police. Now, I know a lot of folks in a lot of places, unfortunately, already know that if they call the police with something like that, they're going to get hung up on. The police aren't going to arrive. They're not going to come out for that. They're not going to take a report. They're too busy. They're too underfunded. They're too understaffed. And that's all true. But in a perfect world, or in a place where you have a well-funded police department, like where I live, for example, the PD is fantastic. The reason you should call and report it is that you don't know what you don't know as the intended victim of a crime or the potential intended victim of a crime. Look, could it be nothing? Sure. It could have been a neighbor who just bought a brand new Dodge Challenger and was on his way home, and you'd never seen that car before. And at the last second, he forgot where he lived. It could be a lot of things. Not likely, but it could be. What it also could be is an attempt at a crime and an ongoing crime spree or a series of crimes. And what you may not know is potentially is there is a detective banging his or her head against the wall somewhere who just needed one little bit of information about that car. That car is robbed, let's say, six other people in a very similar fashion, and you just happen to get the plate. And even though you weren't a victim of a crime, now you've helped the police solve six previous robberies because you got the plate, or maybe you got the last three of the plate, or maybe you got, he had a University of Schmuckatelli sticker on the back window, a big white one. And that's a piece of information the police needed. They didn't know they needed or whatever. So even if you don't think they're going to respond, even if you don't think they're going to take a report or they're going to blow you off, at least attempt in a situation like this to reach out to law enforcement and give them the information. The worst they can say is we're not interested, or they can shine you on or blow you off or whatever, but do make the effort. If it were you that had been the victim of that previous crime, you would want that next person to call and help bring the person to justice who committed the previous crime. So you or someone you loved. So, was there anything you wanted to add before we part ways? George, this has been a pleasure, but I don't want to miss anything or forget anything.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't anything glamorous, and obviously both of these stories could have been me just being completely wrong and super paranoid, but I full heart in my belief we were, we followed that night and going to be, robbed or something, crossing that street in Dallas. I was going to throw in just the normalizing the situation, especially having the spouse and the kids around. It's, and like I said, I could be completely wrong about these. I don't think I was. I think I stopped something. And if I had listened to the people around me, just don't ignore the gut feeling. Yeah. You don't have to be James Bond about it, but I mean, also don't be ignorant.
Yeah.
And another one, you know, a lot of military guys and law enforcement guys are out there. You know, we're all Mr. Cool Guy with a firearm, and some of us might be great shooters, but in that situation where you have your family, let's say in a car or a stroller, your adaptation to fighting, you know, if it comes to that, is going to be completely drastic. So just thinking ahead on those kind of things is what has helped me out and honestly ingrained in me after these situations.
I would go a step further and say that even if your wife and kids weren't with you, if you were totally by yourself and you had two cross-drawn you know, AR rifles on either side and you were an absolute master gunslinger badass, I would still recommend that you avoid the situation regardless. I think you covered it, but I'm going to cover it. I'm going to talk about it again. I want to recap real quick. Be aware of your surroundings. So in both these stories, George was able to see a problem before it became a big problem and then start to formulate a plan. Talk about attitude, skills, and plan, our motto at ASP, right? But you can't plan for something if you don't know what's happening yet. You know, you can't formulate a plan to where are you going to go? Where are you going to drive? You know, are you going to pull into your driveway or not? Are you going to attempt some evasive maneuvers or whatever until you realize there's a problem? You're not going to realize there's a problem if you're not paying attention. So pay attention. Number two, confirmation bias. Number two is normalcy bias. It is real and everyone suffers from it to varying degrees. You have to get past that and not worry about the potential embarrassment if you're wrong of your wife rolling her eyes at you. She's going to roll your eyes at you anyway. You might as well, you know, keep her safe in the process of giving her a reason to do that. And then, you know, do the thing you need to do. And in your case, it was just get the heck out of Dodge. It was, hey, tell your wife and kids, hey, just keep walking for a minute. I'm just going to make sure this guy's nothing. Let her roll her eyes at you and keep walking and do what you got to do to keep your family safe. In that case, it was just turning around. And I'm a big proponent of just acknowledging that you see the person who thinks that they're being sneaky. Just like, hey, how are you? You know, how you doing? Acknowledge them. Let them know you see them. And that won't always solve the problem, obviously. But frequently, it'll make the guy think twice. Like, oh, he's already seen me. Like, I've kind of lost the element of surprise. And maybe that'll convince them to move on and find another victim. George, first of all, thank you for your service, sir. I really do appreciate it. And I appreciate you reaching out, writing into us, and giving us two more good lessons. So 2 weeks in a row, we have now four total stories in 2 weeks of people avoiding trouble, which is why we do what we do here. We also talk about, you know, how to shoot. We talk about training. We talk about all that other sort of stuff. But man, if you can just stay out of the problem to begin with, that's so much better. You know, people, I say this all the time, but people walk up to John after speeches in public at the NRA convention or at SHOT Show. And, you know, their question is always, when can I, you know, when can I shoot someone? When can I do this? And the answer is, well, you can shoot someone anytime you want. That's the truth. They don't even have to be doing anything to you. You can shoot anybody you want, anytime you want. Now, I don't recommend it. You'll go to prison. And if you can avoid, if you think you're righteous in your actions, you very, very well may be. However, there may be an investigator or a prosecutor who has a different view of it. Why risk that if you don't have to? Why risk being on the news? Why risk having your, you know, everything you own taken from you in a civil suit because maybe you were wrong? Just avoid the problem, and you don't have to worry about any of that stuff on the other side because the problem never quite came to fruition. George O'Rourke, again, best of luck in your new place. Blessings on your family, and happy New Year, sir.
Same to you, and I appreciate you, and thank you for all the good content out there.
Thank you.